Pink Whale Nuts Garage.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pink Wheel Nuts Garage. I am your beautiful co-host, Apollonius, and I am joined by my adorable dog, Cairo, and the Faye Driver. Take it away, Faye.
Well, hello, Apollonius. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
You're welcome.
People, this is the only show on Pride 48 where the host never introduces himself. So thank you, Apollonius, for the introduction.
Due to extreme modesty, I'm sure.
So, folks, you are joining us here live on Pride 48. As mentioned, I am the Faye Driver, and we have a special episode tonight because I have a revered guest with me tonight in Apollonius, who is a bit of a car. You know, you folks, you thought that I was a bit of a car freak myself, but Apollonius is a car freak times 10, I think, because you do have to admit, you seem to be extremely knowledgeable about things, and you are totally into cars, right, Apollonius?
I am. I'd say I'm really into car researching, so I have a lot of tabs on where to go to kind of compare everything to everything else. I have a lot of knowledge about modern cars, but older cars, I kind of know the names, but when people start getting really esoteric and it's sort of like, oh, this version of the Mercedes chassis went from this year to this year, that's where I'm sort of like, okay, that you're better than me, good, go. But right. If that makes sense. So.
Sure. It makes sense to somebody. So tonight, folks, on the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage, it's going to be me and Apollonius, and we are going to talk cars, and you're just going to be shaking your heads and saying, what the hell are these guys talking about? So Peter and I are going to get into it completely and totally, and we're going to talk about some very interesting to us kinds of things. So before we get too far, I just want to say, if you're joining us live on Pride 48, you can come and join us in the chat room. Currently in the chat room on Pride 48, we have Brenda Boo. Good evening, Brenda Boo. Moose is here, who was on our last episode of the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage, and RT Cruiser joins us as well, all the way from Australia. So that's who's here at the moment. So we'll say hello to those people, and I will try to keep my eye on the chat room for anybody who might have questions for us. So now, Apollonius, I'm also going to refer to you as Peter, because that's your real first name. So, Peter.
What'd I do?
As is the custom here on the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage, we go around the room and we ask people what they're having to drink. Because, as you know, the whole concept of the garage here is that you come in at the end of the week, it's a Friday afternoon or a Friday evening for many of us, and we're going to come in and sit down at the garage, grab a beer out of the fridge or a beverage of your choosing, and we're going to sit around and bullshit about cars. So, I hope you're having a beverage, Peter.
I am having a Diet Coke.
Perfect.
And depending on how the show goes, there may be a lot of amaretto added to it later.
But. Oh, all right. Fantastic. Because I am actually having what I would call a lemon drop martini, which is a combination of vodka, gin, some lemon juice, some Angostura bitters, and I've not yet figured out what to have as a garnish for this martini. And then I squeeze into it at the very end, like a 1/4 of a lemon has to be squeezed into the top of this. So I'm calling it a lemon drop. It's a creation of my own.
I'm thinking you need a pearl onion for that one.
Yeah, I was thinking pearl onions, too. I think that's probably a good choice.
That sounds like it needs a little bit of sulfur.
Right, right. So for the people who are joining us in the chat room, you could write into the chat room and tell us what you're having to drink. I see Brenda Boo is having a 7-Up, and Moose is having wine. So, all right. So, Peter.
Yes, sir.
Now, you know, it's pretty cold here in Vancouver. We're having a bit of a cold snap.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to tell a cute little story about what happened to me right before we started the show here tonight.
Okay.
Now, you know, I have this dog, which is Max the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great dog. We were out outside in the cold, and Max has a water bowl outside that just we just leave it outside there and fill it up every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
But the water has iced over, so there's a very thin layer of ice on Max's water bowl.
Uh-huh.
And this is a little thing I discovered about Max, a couple of years ago now. Max actually loves to chew ice.
Uh-huh.
So I was feeding him today. I busted up the frozen up ice out of his water bowl and was uh-huh. giving him ice, and he was chewing it up like someone would chew ice out of a cup, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my cute
story. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my cute story about Max the dog, and he wants more. He always wants more ice to chew, so there. Now, I know, Peter, that you have a dog as well. You've got yourself a little puppy, and do you want to tell us what kind of dog you have?
All right. I have an adorable dog called Cairo, and I got her around February of last year when she was about 4 months old. She was, I may be getting the math a bit wrong, but I do know she was born pretty much Halloween of 2010. And she is the cross between a miniature dachshund and a black lab. We do not know the physics of how that all worked out. We assume either mommy was a trooper or daddy was a jumper, and we pray for pain reasons that daddy was a jumper. Otherwise, so she basically looks like a black lab puppy that kind of has stunted legs, although everyone who looks at her can kind of go, oh yeah, she's got weenie feet because they're kind of very sharp clawed digging feet, and she loves digging. She's much more intelligent than any black lab I've ever owned. So I think she also has sort of the dachshund sentiment. But other than that, she's very sweet. She likes gnawing on you, but she'll never bite you. So thankfully she got lab soft mouth. But I guess one of the stories I have is she once picked up a dead squirrel and sort of like the, oh no, Cairo, give that back. And we tried to pry her jaws apart. And she was like, no, this is mine. And then sort of like, oh, if she wanted to, she could bite through our arm. But, you know, when she's gnawing on us, she's actually just chewing a little bit and being sweet. But if you try and take something away from her that she doesn't want to give up, you can't.
Really? Yeah. That's good.
Otherwise, it's also 71 degrees down here in Atlanta because we're having a freak heat snap. So.
Well, aren't you lucky? Well, we actually had a beautiful day here in Vancouver. It's been bright and sunny, but cool. We've been in the negative. We've been below freezing. For you, I realize that would be 32 degrees. For me, freezing is zero. So, but anyway, yeah, it's been a beautiful day.
With your crazy logical system.
Right. Yeah. Logic. Who ever heard of that? So, Epilonius, I want to talk to you about your cars. Now, like me, you have a bit of a collection of cars. And actually, I just want to mention your podcast quickly first before we get too carried away. You have a podcast which is called They Don't Know. And you also have a blog, which I believe is also called They Don't Know. Am I correct in that?
Yes, sir, you are.
Do you want to just give out your details on how we can find the They Don't Know empire?
Easiest way to get to it is look for Epilonius. That's Epilonious. And if you put that into Google or go to Epilonius.com or Epilonius.net, all of them will forward you to my podcast and blog. And I don't update it very often, but when I do, I hopefully think people find it kind of interesting and... I think the most recent episode is trying to get you to get Windows 8, so you might want to avoid that one. Although, I've liked it, but so many people are scared of it right now.
I did listen to that episode, and yes, you were a good advocate for Windows 8. But yet, you like Apple products, too, so this you're a little bit dichotomous in the way you approach technology.
I'd say it's like the way I approach cars. I also have a Linux box, and so I basically have a Windows machine for work, a Windows machine I'm talking to you on right now, a Macintosh kind of in the back corner of the closet, and a Linux box in the back corner of the closet. So if it's an operating system, I probably played with it.
Right.
And Ironically, my love for Apple has been waning, and I think the easiest way to describe it is I love an underdog. So I really liked Apple in like 2000, 1999. Steve Jobs came back and it's like, oh, cool. Now all this new stuff is coming out. And I really, really liked it. And then as soon as the iPad came out and like the stock surged to $1 million and everyone went, oh my God, it's the most amazing piece of technology ever. And I'm going, no, it's not. It's a really big iPod Touch. I kind of fell out of love with them. And it's sort of like, oh God, they're going to be a gigantic juggernaut. And it's basically, I mean, I'll use them, but I don't. They're kind of just another big player in the field, and now I'm eyeing them warily, trying to hope they don't screw too many people over. But, I mean, they're cool, but just not as awesome as some people. I think there are other things that are do some stuff better, and hopefully they won't lose their mojo, but I fear they might. So.
Yeah. Now, but have you had any experience with the new Windows tablets and things that have come out? You say you have a Windows phone, right?
Yes,
recent phone?
Yeah, I have a Windows 8 phone. It is a HTC 8X with Verizon, and it basically behaves exactly like the Windows 8 desktop does, and Windows, that's essentially where Windows is going. They're trying to make all of their interfaces pretty much the same. So a computer is a really big touchscreen thing, and a phone is a really small touchscreen thing, but you can kind of download and install stuff from the Windows Store. And granted, the phone has to be couched in a store because they're not really that powerful, and you have concerns about battery life and not having the phone be so laden that it can't pick up a call. And that's why some of the cheaper tablets have Windows RT on them, because they are not really that powerful and you're trying to maintain battery life and you don't want things to have so much crap running in the background it can no longer play a movie and piss you off.
Right.
And actually, I think that's where Apple is going to, because they keep taking bits from iOS and putting it into Mac OS X, and they're making phones and tablets a lot more powerful, and I'm pretty sure that pretty soon they're just going to be sort of like, look, the MacBook Air comes with an optional keyboard, and then everyone will go, that's amazing, and then everyone will go, but Microsoft Surface did that 3 years ago, and everyone will go, we don't care about that, it wasn't Apple.
Yeah.
But, sorry, I'm letting my prejudices see through.
No problem,
how unbecoming.
We can take it. I'm an Apple user, but not necessarily an Apple fanboy, so I can take the heat.
Yeah.
I just want to mention in the chat room, we've been joined by a couple of extra guests now. We have George in Atlanta here, who is having a screwdriver to drink in honor of the garage tonight. Thank you, George, and welcome to the show. That Peter G has joined us as well. So hello to those people. Okay, now let's put the computers aside, Peter, and let's get into the meat of the conversation. And I want to talk about cars. Now, both you and I, we are very avid car drivers. Oh, also, Eric Boo has joined us sort of in the chat room. He has joined us vicariously through his wife, Brenda Boo. So, hello, Eric. He's listening to us remotely via his telephone. So there. All right.
Yay.
So, everybody's here. Fantastic. Now, Peter.
Yes, sir.
I want to talk about a little bit about our racing experience and some of our more extreme sort of driving experiences. Mm-hmm. And I've done some autocross.
Okay.
And you have also recently, well, 2 or 3 months ago now, been participating or involved in some way with the Mini Grand Prix. So, you've done autocross, is that correct?
I have done SCCA solo. So it's the kind of autocross where you set up cones in a parking lot and drive around them, and it's very technical courses that don't let you go that fast.
Right.
The one variation on that is a new, basically Atlanta, because it's the most civilized place for about 300 miles around, or at least one of the biggest metropolitan areas, attracts a lot of money, and one of the things that has opened up kind of in the North Georgia mountains is this place called Atlanta Motorsports Park, and they basically had an F1 driver come down, and who's very famous at designing tracks, and come design this track, and has tons of hills and elevations and tight turns, and they set up a solo course on kind of the back part of the track where it's still very twisty and you can't get up tons of speed. Mm-hmm. So we were able to do that, and it's sort of like, oh my goodness, we're actually driving the car and are able to take it out of second gear. Ah, we're going 60. Hold on, everybody. But
So what do they call? Sorry. So what do they call that? Do they term that as autocross or is?
They called it like track cross, I believe, because it's not the same as the PDX, which is the performance driving experience, where you essentially. It's still the spirit of you take the car you drive to work every day and bring it here, but PDX is a lot more intense, and they actually have a lot more instruction, and more often than not, since there might be multiple cars running on the track at the same time, they probably require you to get a better license of sorts. Solo, you basically just drive up with your car, drive up with the license, there's only one person on the track at a time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just kind of you're trying to get around the course in, you have three runs, and you're trying to make each run shorter. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that is similar, and you described it earlier, that's similar to my autocross experience, which is the driving around the cones in the parking lot, and, you know, one car on the on the track at a time, and that is enjoyable. I don't mind doing that, but it doesn't really fulfill me completely, because, as you say, you never get out of second gear, and it's extremely technical in nature. Now you have a Mercur car, which is a Ford, is basically a European Ford racing car. Can you describe that car a little bit for us?
Sure. The Mercur XR4 Ti is from 1986, and Mercur was a Ford brand that existed from about 85 to I think like 91. And it was created to fight with the German imports. And what Ford actually did is they took a British Ford called the Ford Sierra Cosworth, which was kind of it's like a Fox Body hatchback Mustang, but built in Britain. And it had a turbocharged four-cylinder in it, and it was really hopped up. But they went ahead and took it over to Germany so that they could do some extra styling on it and assembled it there so that they could go, oh, look, it's a Ford from Germany and we're importing it into the U.S. So it's like going to be as cool as all these BMWs and other fancy things you see. And they started selling them through Mercury dealerships, and there are really only two models, the two-door XR4 Ti, which was like XR meaning sporty car and four meaning it's a four-cylinder engine and TI saying it's turbo.
Oh, okay.
And the other
so there is a meaning to all those bloody numbers and letters.
When you look at kind of what they were thinking of doing, they were also thinking of coming out with the XR 4x4, which was going to have the Haldex all-wheel drive system, and they might have come out with like an XR 6Ti just to really blow the pants off of all performance markets, but the only other car they had was the Scorpio, which was kind of had a fancy V6 engine in it and was a big sedan, but was also rather sporty. I guess the closest car to the Mercur in the States was probably the SVT Ford Mustang, which was a Fox Body Mustang, so it was a hatchback, but the V6 and the 5-liter V8 were actually kind of underpowered and horrible because it was the 80s and there were lots of emissions restrictions and a lot of insurance restrictions, and there was just cars weren't going very fast. They were getting lighter and cheaper and tinier so that they could essentially get out of the 70s where they were massive hulking things that ate tons and tons of gas. And what the SVT Mustang did is they actually took the 2.3-liter four-cylinder out of a Ranger pickup truck and put a big-ass turbocharger on it and went, ooh, this thing makes more power than the 5-liter V8. And lots of people kind of had a lot of fun with it because, well, it was a powerful Mustang that was actually a lot lighter because it didn't have this humongous, hulking, twice-as-many-cylinders thing sitting up front. The only real distinction between the two is that the Mercur had independent rear suspension, so technically it could handle a bit better. But
so now, just so people know, RT Cruiser has put into the chat room for us a picture of the Mercur in its generic sold form. People would have seen it. Maybe you can describe that vehicle. Are you in the chat? You're in the chat room, Apollonius. Do you see got up here?
Yeah, and also one of the reasons that Mercur didn't survive very long is that the cars, both the Scorpio and the XR4 Ti, were kind of fugly.
Right.
They were unfortunately beaten with an ugly stick, and now people sort of look at them and go, oh, they're unique and they're certainly different, but the styling on them was god awful.
Right. And they were afflicted with a huge fin on the back.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that can be a positive or a negative depending on where you sit on that fence.
It was ironically the fin was very functional, because otherwise without the fin the car gets excruciatingly ass happy whenever it picks up speed because it's shaped like a reverse teardrop, but at the same time it was this gigantic plasticky looking thing that looks like something a 5-year-old would have driven on what he thinks a sports car looks like. Right. And it was also a split wing, so it's broken into two pieces. It's just like, you can't just have a whale tail on it like a Porsche, you've got to break it into two bits. What the hell?
Right. So very forward thinking, perhaps. So now, have you taken the Mercure out onto the autocross track then?
I'd say the closest thing we had was that track cross. Before we bought the car, it had been at Road Atlanta and I think run in a few PDX events, which is performance driving experience, so it was actually taken up to high speeds. And essentially when we got the car, it was limping, and the brake fluid had been boiled, and we mainly went after it because it was so darn cheap, and it was already something that was designed to run with the turbocharger on it, so it wouldn't be that hard to modify it to put an intercooler system on it and a much bigger turbo on it.
So now you're in this car, you own this car with a group of guys, right?
Yeah. And the reason...
And you've actually done quite a bit of modification to it. You've taken the standard Mercure and you've souped it up, so to speak.
Yes. When we first got it, it was back in 2006, and there's actually, and I'm not sure if it's in Canada, but in America, there's a group called Grassroots Motorsports, and they have what they lovingly call the whatever the year is, so right now it would be like the 2013 challenge, where you don't spend more than $2,013 on a car, and then you take it to a road race, which they lovingly call the 12 Hours of Lemons. And the idea is you just get a cheap, near broken down, or some sort of hideous amalgamation. There have been all sorts of things where, like, someone took a Miata rear end and welded it to a Triumph front end and put a tube frame in it to hold it together, but otherwise, like, weird monstrosities like that, and people are racing an old turbo Volvo 240s, and so we were getting it for that, and we really liked it because for $1,000 we were getting something where the interior had already been ripped out and it was already kind of track prepped. But unfortunately, as we kept adding stuff to it and fixing it up, we went over budget and we went, actually, we just want to turn this into kind of a shared track car rather than try and keep the price low, just because we realized to get it safe and reliable enough where we didn't hate it, because none of us were that like gung-ho or suicidal. We were going to put too much money into it. And one of the things about the... like one of the contracts you sign in 24 Hours of Lemons or any of these grassroots races is if someone offers to walk up to you with, or basically if someone walks up with $2,013 in their hand, you have to give them the car. And that's like their way of making sure that you don't secretly put $6,000 into it and just hope no one knows.
Really? Oh, yep. That's interesting.
If you balk at it or try and drive away, they pretty much, hunt you down and like destroy it with a bulldozer, or I think those are the stories, but it's kind of one of those things where also if it's very obvious that you are just trying to like screw with them or mess with the rules, they will crush the car. It's kind of like you turn the pinks over to the race authority while you're racing it, and they kind of give them back to you in good faith. But if it's obvious that you have a car that is way too expensive to be there and you just felt like trouncing everyone with your fanciness, then they'll just be sort of like, nope, our car, we're gonna destroy it.
Right.
Well, stuff like that.
That's good. It keeps you honest, right?
Yeah. And so, thus we were sort of like, we would put too much money. We've already kind of put too much money in this thing. Let's just like, you know, keep it for years and years and use it as like the track car that we all want so that we don't end up destroying our daily drivers. And that's pretty much what happened.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. So you've done even better than going autocross in this car. You've taken it out on the track extreme or whatever you called it.
Yeah, that was definitely a lot of fun because it was basically something where you're getting to go up a 40-degree elevation change and then go around a very long slow curve and then do a tight curve and then have sort of a straightaway. And thankfully, they basically set up the cones where you couldn't really get above, I'd say, 60, 65 without starting to kick out the rear end. But still, yeah, I was in third gear flooring it and being sort of like, ooh, 20 pounds of boost is nice.
Right. Cool.
Oh, and as for modifications, we replaced the fuel pump. We took the fuel tank out of a Mustang and put it in, and there are a lot of washers and things holding that thing in place. We took the turbocharger from a big-ass turbo diesel, I think it's a Holset HY35, and put it on instead of the little 16-pound oil-cooled turbo. It's now, or a water-cooled turbo. It's now a 35-pound of boost oil-cooled turbo. What else? Oh, we added
Just a minute now. Can the engine and the system, the cooling system, handle that kind of boost?
It's a truck engine. So it's a cast iron 2.3 liter with a single overhead cam. So it's like not complicated enough to really get screwed up. The main limitation on it is the exhaust port. People have gotten them up to 40 pounds of boost, and it's just sort of like, yeah, it can't go over that because it won't let enough air out of the cylinders once you start trying to push it harder than that to actually spin it up any faster.
So now just tell me now, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, like, how much do you like driving this car?
I'd say, compared to my Miata, which I'd say is like a 9, I'd give this car a 7 because while it is definitely more thrilling, it's also that much more terrifying, and there's also kind of this, oh shit, what's going to break on it today? Is it going to strand me on the side of the road? There have just been, it's basically drawn blood from every single member of our crew except me. But I'm also the one who has driven it when we put on the brakes real hard and the suspension bushings fell out. And basically the front wheel sitting there rubbing against the back of the fender wall because the thing that was supposed to keep it laterally locked down was made of rotten rubber and fell apart. So
really?
It's just kind of like, ooh, let's put some polyurethane bushings in that this time. Yeah.
Right.
But
okay, so now where else have you driven this car aside from the extra track experience or whatever you call it?
It basically sits in our parking, or it sits out in front of one of our houses or in the garage of one of our houses, and we really only take it to car shows or to autocross.
Is it licensed? Can you actually drive it on the street? So that's how you get it from place to place?
Yeah, I mean, it has a catalytic converter in it, even though now we don't have to emissions test it anymore because it's so old that they don't care. It's just kind of like, if the car's made it this long, we don't care how much it pollutes. Just like...
Right.
We
have the same issue in Canada here. They really, as far as emissions go and stuff. So right.
Mm-hmm. But it's been licensed and it's got all working running gear. It's one of those things where you've got sort of toggle switches controlling your left and right blinker that you constantly forget to turn on and off. But because the interior's been completely gutted, but yeah, it's got headlights, it's got brake lights, it works.
Okay, now you mentioned your Miata. Now, for those people who are interested in cars, I would recommend that you follow Apollonius's audio/video blog, because Apollonius does reviews on the various cars that he rents. He rents a lot of cars, people. And he'll do, every once in a while, he comes up with a video exposition on the cars that he rents. And I actually want to talk a little bit about my recent rental experience, but we're going to talk about you first, Peter.
Okay.
You should follow, if you're interested in cars and you want to know about cars that are manufactured in recent years and how well they are. Peter often will rent a car because of his work situation. And you've done a couple of videos. You've done the Altima. You've done the that square boxy thing from
the Nissan Cube.
The Cube, right? And a couple of other cars. And I've quite enjoyed your videos. Tell us again where we can find your blogs that have the videos on them.
That's going to be apollonius.net, and if you look on the side of my blog, you'll see the They Don't Know video car reviews. And yeah, to be fair, they are limited to rental fleets, so you probably won't see a lot of cars that traditionally do not go to rental companies. So, like, the fanciest sports car you'll see is a Mustang or a Camaro, and the fanciest, like, you'll see a lot of Corollas and Hyundai products and all that.
I think we should tip our hat, though, to the fact that the cars that the rental companies use are the popular cars. They're affordable, they're popular, they're good on gas mileage, and these are the kinds of cars that the general public is purchasing, right? Like the Altima and the Cube. And I mean, these are all great cars. And so I think, you know, if you're interested in purchasing a new car, anyone who might be listening to this podcast, I would recommend that you check out Peter's video blogs because they're quite good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I enjoy them. But I want, let's change our focus a little bit, Peter, and okay. I want to talk about your Miata, because okay. This is your everyday driver, right?
No, my everyday driver, I have three cars registered to me.
Aren't you special?
Well,
how decadent to have three cars to choose from.
Yes, but one of them pretty much is probably worth $300 right now. The main car I drive is a 2004 Mazda 3 5-door, which is a fancy way of calling it a hatchback or a wagon. But
okay, all right, now just stop there just a minute. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure if you did you hear my review of the Mazda 3 that I had for a short time?
And I think you considered
What did you think?
Well, what year was it? Wasn't it like a 2011 or 2012
or
something?
Yeah, it was very recent, 2012 or something like that.
I think it was one of those things where you had the 2-liter in it, didn't you? Or was it the 2.5-liter?
Yeah, no, it must have. I think it was probably the 2-liter.
Yeah, so I think you kind of said it's like, this thing isn't that powerful, and it's kind of got a weird garish smile on it, and it kind of basically ranked a little bit above the Corolla and the Civic in terms of driving excitement, but not much more.
Although, I must say, the suspension on that car was fantastic. I think the suspension is incredible, and I think overall the car is fantastic. If only it had a bigger engine, and if it did have a bigger engine and a transmission, I really would have liked to have had a standard transmission in that car, and that would be a great car.
Most of the cars that sell are the Mazda 3 S models, which have a 2.5 liter that has a lot more low-end torque, and they come with a 6-speed manual transmission.
And that would be a fantastic car, yeah.
Well, they're cool. The problem is they do not really make above 29 miles per gallon. So it's sort of you're kind of paying for the fun you're having, unless you're really, really willing to not mash on the gas pedal, which is really hard to do in that car.
Right.
Excuse me.
Right, yeah. Overall, I thought that car was fantastic. So now tell us, just tell me again which vehicle you have, which Mazda you have.
It's the... right now I have a 2004 Mazda 3 5-door. So it's the S model, and it comes with a 2.3-liter engine with about 158 horsepower, and it tends to get around 32 miles per gallon. And that car I mainly kept because right now my main project is I'm driving back and forth kind of from the north side of Atlanta to the south side every day, and that's about 40 miles. So I'm probably putting 15,000 to 20,000 miles on my car. So when I got the Miata, I was sort of like, let me go ahead and keep this one as a commuter instead of turning it in, since it's kind of old and wouldn't get me that much on a trade-in anyway. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, the other reason is the Miata I wanted to kind of have be the garage queen that just lived there and I kept for 30 years and hopefully only managed to put 100,000 miles on in that time.
Right.
And otherwise, I'd have just kind of a more plebeian but still kind of fun car to take me back and forth to work.
Mm-hmm.
So... that's okay. The theory there.
So, all right. So now, are you telling me that you don't drive the Miata very much?
No, it's pretty much a weekend car that I occasionally will take down to work if it's a really nice day, or I took it to work today because it was 70 degrees in the middle of January, and it was too much of a lark not to drive down. Even though it was a bit rainy, I kept the top down.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was fun.
And thank you to RT Cruiser once again, who has just popped into the chat room a picture of the Mazda 3 four-door or maybe five-door sedan, whatever they're calling it.
That is a 2004 Mazda 3S four-door. The five-door looks more like a Golf. So it has a fifth door on the back. So,
all right. Thank you. Well, there you go, folks.
Sorry.
When you drive your Miata, where do you drive it? What kind of driving do you do with it?
I generally tend to, well, it's Atlanta, so of course all of my friends tend to be about 20 to 30 minutes away and two interstates, so it's one of those things where I drive it a lot in kind of the fun little city of Roswell where I live, and then once I get on the highway I speed up, and then I go into the fun little burb of Atlanta that they live and slow down and drive it around kind of twisty, fun, hilly back roads again, but... So I'd say just mixed driving. I've also taken that car to SCCA and had a lot of fun with it.
And we'll just remind people, SCCA would be the driving around in a parking lot around cones.
Right. And so you're not likely to ruin the car that you need to take to work the next day or that you want to use as a weekend car.
And actually, I'll just stop you. If you can describe your Miata for us, and, well, it's like it's a convertible and engine and transmission. Can you tell us?
Okay. The model I have is a 2010 Mazda MX-5, which is also known as the Miata. It's the touring trim, which means it came with cruise control, the 6-speed manual transmission, the suspension and brake upgrades, and the limited slip rear differential, but... it still has like a vinyl roof and cloth seats and doesn't come with all the tech packages or heated seats and all that crap. To get that, you have to go to the Grand Touring, but it's also not as cheap as the Sport trim, which comes with only a 5-speed transmission. The engine in it and in all Miatas is a 174-horsepower 2-liter that revs to about 76,000 RPM and has about 150 foot-pounds of torque, but they... essentially, the first Miatas, the NAs and NC, or the NAs and NBs, the NAs are the ones with the pop-up headlights, the NBs are the ones with the fixed headlights, and the NCs are the ones that look like mine, which are kind of bloated Tic Tacs.
And that, can you just describe for us what your the people are asking in the chat room about the differential you have? Describe what a differential is and what your style is versus what a differential might be.
Okay, a limited slip differential is, well, I'll go ahead and use the My Cousin Vinny description. It is a sometimes known as pause attraction, but what it essentially does is, so the Miata is a rear-wheel drive car, and in order to make it sportier, it has the drive shaft goes back to a differential which sits in between the two rear wheels, and the differential transfers powers to the left and right rear tire. If it is not limited slip, it's an open diff, and what that means is a tire that has less grip is more likely to spin, because basically the differential will just send power to both tires, but if one tire is more likely to spin, then it will lovingly send it there because, well, there's less friction and more power can go there. In a limited slip differential, they either have computer-controlled clutches or there's just kind of a viscous fluid lockup system where it will detect a massively different speed between the two wheels, either through that or some mechanical means. It makes it so that if one tire starts trying to spin faster than the other tire, it will lock itself up and both tires will spin at the same speed. The reason that a differential has to be at least somewhat open is because if you're turning left or right, especially in a parking lot, the inside tire is going to move slower than the outside tire. But if you're laying down hard power in a corner, you don't want the inside tire just spinning as fast as it can. And actually, the Merkur has a open differential. So it's kind of fun because you'll be going around cones flooring it, and you just feel the inside tire kind of go and spin and grip. And the other inside tire, as you're going around, starts spinning up and then grips. And it's one of those things where it actually helps, because if we had a limited slip differential, it might actually have enough power to spin both tires and spin the car around. So the open diff is kind of a safety system that we don't want to fix yet.
Okay, so now let's just stop right there. Because so all of the joy that I get in life is the ability for me to break loose my rear wheels.
Uh-huh.
So now I love sliding sideways. I don't know about you. It sounds like you might resist this urge, or so. What's your take on going around a corner with your rear end going out on you?
I can do it. It's kind of fun to do, but at the same time, I guess the thing is like when I was growing up, when I was 8, I got kind of a 2-seater go-kart, and it basically did not have a differential on it. It just had sort of a solid rear axle, and I mean solid, no suspension whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So it was really easy to kind of floor it around a turn and go, oh, look, I'm sliding sideways. I turn into the skid. And so I feel sort of like at 31, I've grown out of it.
My heart.
I mean, it's fun to do. I don't desire to try and do it a whole bunch because while it looks kind of cool, it's actually not faster.
You're right. I
and also, I'm scared because some people who don't know how to handle it properly, like they don't realize that you need to turn into the skid and that sort of thing, it means that you'll whip the ass of the car around and it will turn sideways and then suddenly catch and ram your ass into a guardrail. And yes, that's a mess, and it ruins cars, and it sucks to see someone like in a Miata or in a
BMW Mustang 745 series
or a Mustang or whatever sporty car just kind of planted sideways into a guardrail after they went around a turn too hot. Right. At like any type of rear-wheel drive car. And that's the other thing. So many people don't have rear-wheel drive cars now. So many just generic cars are front-wheel drive because they're cheaper to make and kind of easier to drive in snow and stuff, that they don't remember the sensation of like driving on an icy patch with a rear-wheel drive car and being sort of like, oh, crap, the car's going sideways because the rear tires lost their grip. What do I do? What do I do? So, yes, now with ABS and traction control, no one really remembers how to pump their brakes or turn into a skid.
Right.
So,
right.
It's kind of cool, but it's sort of like, if you want to learn to do that, the best place to do it is like at SCCA where you're in a parking lot or on an actual driver's, I'd say, driving improvement course skid pad where they just cover the thing with water and let you spin to your little heart's content. I think the actual goal in some of those tests is you need to slam on the brakes, spin the car to a complete 360, and then go straight again without generally leaving the line of travel you were doing. So, fun stuff like that.
No, come on. Ugh.
Oh, come on. Don't you want to be like all the really good Scandinavian drivers? Because that's literally what they have to do to get a license. It's sort of like, no, if you hit an icy patch, you need to have enough control of the car to like go, whoops, I'm going backwards. Whoops, I'm going forward again. Okay, I'm in the same lane I was in.
Yeah. But, you know, but as you say, our cars are so technologically advanced now that, in fact, it's difficult to get, I mean, you can't make your car go out of control these days even be able to practice car control.
Unless you read the manual, look up on the internet, and figure out how you have to hit the traction control button and how many times you have to pull the parking brake and how many times you have to turn the car on and off before it will actually do it.
Right, precisely.
Mm-hmm. And then when you do it, it has all sorts of alarms and squeaking buttons going, you realize you're driving in an unsafe manner. I hope you're on a track.
Precisely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, so you and I are different in this respect because I am always trying to kick my rear end out or to put my car into situations where it requires me to maintain control.
Uh-huh. And I know exactly the car you want to at least test drive or play with. Scion and Subaru Toyota and Subaru have kind of co-developed a car called the GT86. In the US at least, it comes as the Scion FRS and the Subaru BRZ. And what it is it's based on kind of the old Toyota AE86. I believe here it was the Celica GTS. In Japan, it was the Sprinter Tirreno. And it was a very, very light, very, very well-balanced hatchback that only had 160 horsepower engine and itty-bitty skinny tires because ostensibly it was supposed to be kind of like a fun-to-drive economy car, but it was rear-wheel drive, and it was actually the thing that started the whole drifting craze because it was so well-balanced, it was very, and said, such tiny tires and just enough power that you could pretty much 20 miles per hour going around a roundabout, you could give it a little bit too much gas in second, and the rear end would break out. And then you can sit there and spin around the roundabout sideways as many times as you want, and then the second you were done doing that, just take your foot off the gas, and then everything will catch again, and out you go, leaving a trail of smoke in your wake. So in the spirit of that, they have made this new car, which looks pretty good, has a 2-liter flat four boxer engine in it, makes astoundingly good mileage. It gets like, right. I have a friend who has one who gets like 37, 38 in it, even though it's only rated for 29. And one of the tricky things they did is they actually put Prius tires on it so that they are tires that specifically do not grip that well. Right. They're sporty and they're high mileage, but if you give it a bit too much gas in a roundabout at 20 miles an hour, the ass end kicks out. You can spin around the roundabout as many times as you want to. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you would have a lot of fun test driving that car. You may end up with one or may talk Mr. Anderson into getting one. And it's it's an interesting car because it's like only 200 horsepower. And essentially what it's doing is it's gunning for the Miata. It's like, hey, remember how everyone said, gosh, I wish that Mazda made a Miata coupe so that it would, like, you know, be a little bit stiffer and handle a little bit better, since convertibles tend to be a bit twisty and even roadsters tend to be a bit twisty.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty much what this is. It has 30 more horsepower and is a coupe, so it rides a bit stiffer and it's about the same weight and it's about the same price. So it's probably going to become the new starter sports car. And also it's got the same ridiculously good handling that the Miata has. They actually put it around the track, and it's one of those things where normally what happens is the Miata will beat everything out of the corners and then get caught up with in the straights. But this car, it will keep up with it in the corners and then pass it in the straights and then stay ahead of it in the corners and then get further ahead in the straights. And it is actually interesting to, now it's kind of the, do you want the FRS, which goes a bit faster, or do you want the Miata, which is also fun because it's a convertible? But
You know, I have to say, I'm quite happy with the choices that I've made in my vehicle, in my fleet. They're quite entertaining in all of the ways that I like to drive my cars.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure I'm going to be buying an FRS or a BRZ anytime in the future.
Maybe not drive it, but if you see one at like a performance driving school that you get to play with, you'd probably have a really good time.
Mm-hmm.
Or if like a friend had one at SCCA or one of these track events and offered to let you drive it, I'd say take them up on it.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, both the Miata and this car, like, what I like to say about it is they have just enough power to get you into trouble. They're not really ridiculously fast cars. They don't have the fastest 0 to 60 times. The reason that everyone loves them is they're so eminently controllable, and they're so eminently, like, they give you tons of feedback, and if you just kind of are getting yourself into trouble, you just take your foot off the gas and take your foot off the brake and start steering a bit harder, and everything unwinds. It will just kind of go, oh, I see what you're trying to do. Okay, I'll stay. Like, the thing that's so dangerous about Vipers and Corvettes and stuff is you can kind of start getting sideways, but not have, like, the power or control to get back out of it. And that's when you start just spinning uncontrollably or find yourself catching and then going into a guardrail. And in those cars, it's really expensive because they tend to be made of fiberglass and other fancy, expensive bits. Also just really high power cars. Like, I'd say that you probably have tons of control if you can take a BMW 7 Series and kick out the ass end on it and keep it like from going absolutely crazy on you when it starts doing that.
I was just going to say, you know, in that BMW, that big long 745, everything happens in slow motion. Like when you're going, sideways around a corner, because it's so long. It's extremely long, and there's like it's like time slows down for you. It's kind of weird. I'm not sure I can explain it completely, but the thing that amazes me about this BMW is it has a lot of power. There's more than enough power. The rear wheels are constantly having the traction control kick in on me to stop the spin.
You're constantly having to argue with physics, are you?
Precisely. And then when you turn off all of that traction control stuff in that car, it's just kind of funny because it's like, it's kind of like sending, you know, going sideways in a bus, really.
Uh-huh. Because it's also just sort of the, okay, what we have here is 500 horsepower trying to push 3,000, or trying to push like 3 tons, through contact patches, which are about as big as a shoe. So good luck with that. So if you start getting things sideways or start really ramping up the power through it, stuff's going to break loose and you're going to have a lot of fun.
Right. Yeah. So, but anyway, so that car, you know, it's a great car. I love that car. It's fun. Every once in a while, I take it out to the back roads and get the back end out on it sideways just to experience what it's like. But it's actually not something I'd recommend because, as you say, it takes a lot of skill to control that car when it's not obeying the laws of physics, shall we say.
How's the Crossfire for that?
The Crossfire is fantastic because it's extremely light. The weight distribution in it is almost 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
It has all kinds of power, and so it's easy to break loose, and it's very controllable. So the only thing that concerns me about that car is it has a very short wheelbase. Mm-hmm. So when you're breaking loose on it, it can bite back. Like if you're not careful about what you're doing, it can snap out on you and leave you sitting, you know, pointing the opposite direction from what you intended. You know, like you find.
So basically, the rear end might just start being sort of like, I don't want to hold this anymore. Bye.
Yeah, exactly. So as long as you can, if you're prepared for it, and as long as you are ahead of it, or what am I trying to say? You have to be prepared for it to snap on you. It has a tendency to snap out. You know, you've heard of this term, snap oversteer,
mm-hmm.
Which is essentially a violent spinning out of the rear end on you when you're not really expecting it. I've come to learn in that car. I've been driving this car for about 8 years now, so I'm quite familiar with how it reacts. So there is a fine line. There's a line where you can cross, and when you cross that line, you definitely know it. So
we call that the oh shit moment.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. And now, actually speaking, so we're going to have to wind down the show here. We've come to the end of our time, and I want to cover over a couple of quick topics here. I just want to do a bit of a follow up from last week's show and to mention some of the interactions I've had with some of the listeners of the Pink Wheel Nuts podcast. Last week on the show, we were talking about changing your headlight bulbs, and John from the Dark Forest podcast, who was on last week's show, mentioned that to me in an email that he has had to replace his headlights. And we were talking about headlights in the last show and halogen lights. So apparently, John's headlights have both burnt out in what appears to be the same time. Both of his low beam headlights have burnt out. So mm-hmm. He took it to his mechanic, and his mechanic thinks probably that one headlight burnt out first and he didn't quite notice it and was burnt out for a while, and then the second headlight burnt out and he's checked and both of the bulbs were toasted out. Mm-hmm. So he's had his headlights fixed or replaced. So that's one update we've had from the last show, and I'm just going to quickly check my email here because I know there's some other contact. So just bear with me for a minute while I press the buttons. Some of you on Twitter may have noticed that Casey in Denver has he broke his finger or something. He sent me an email, and so his finger is in a cast, essentially. And so I just want to say hello to Casey in Denver, and sorry to hear that you have a damaged finger. It's his texting finger. If you follow him on Twitter, you'll see that he has texted that his finger is all bandaged up. So sorry about that, Casey. And quickly, before we end out the show tonight, I want to address the other guests who've joined us tonight in the chat room on pride48.com. We've now been joined by That Peter G, Toppy Smelly is here, Haunt Cub has joined us, and believe it or not, Big Fatty is with us in the chat room as well, so hello to Big Fatty. We also have joining us tonight Brenda Boo, George in Atlanta, Mark in Canada has joined us, RT Cruiser's been throwing pictures into the chat room, which I'm going to steal and I will put into the enhanced podcast of this show when it's released over iTunes. And just for people to know, in case you're wondering where the hell last week's show is, I want to address how the schedule works here on the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage show. As you know, I work I work a 4-on-4-off schedule. So 4 days of the month, I'm able to put out the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage live on pride48.com. And then because I have to work the next 4 Fridays, I can't do a show. So what I do is we do the live show on 4 Fridays of the month. And then I will post those shows on the 4 Fridays that I'm not able to be live. So if you're looking for the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage and wondering why the live show has not been posted yet, just be patient. It'll be posted in about a month from when you heard it live on Pride 48. All right, so Peter, do you have any final closing thoughts you want to get out before we end the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage tonight?
Just thanks for having me on. I hope everyone had a good time.
I'm sure they did. There's lots of chatter in the chat room, so I think people are having a good time. Before we go, let's just get your details about where we can find you on the internets, Peter.
I'm on the internets under epilonius.net. That's E-P-I-L-O-N-I-O-U-S. If you type that into Google, you'll pretty much find all of my exploits, my blog, my website, my videos. It may take a bit of digging, but otherwise, you'll find it.
And thanks for joining me tonight, Peter. I've really enjoyed our car chat. I hope everyone else has enjoyed it as well. I didn't get to tell you about all the fixes that I had to do to the truck, little green truck with a big heart, and all the transmission problems. I've had to take the spy car in to the BMW dealer. Actually, you know, I just want to take a minute to talk about BMWs. Can I indulge you, Peter, and the people in the chat room just for a moment?
Sure.
Thank you. I just want to say, now listen, this is what has happened to the old spy car, which is the big black BMW. Now, you know, somebody drove into my car, into the BMW, and they busted up the front end. They tore away the bumper. They sideswiped the front fender and the wheel and all that, right? I believe I've spoken about that on the Pink Wheel Nuts podcast.
Terribly sorry to hear it, by the way.
Yes, thank you. So it's been all fixed. The insurance has looked after everything. It's been, you know, generally a positive experience, is as positive as having your car bashed into can be. So the car goes in for service. It gets a new fender, gets a new bumper. Everything's fixed, all beautiful. Now, on this car, I have a feature on it where you can just walk up to the car and pull on the door handle. And as long as you have the key on your person somewhere, the door will unlock, right? This is known as the comfort access feature.
Or keyless entry.
Keyless entry, right. The other option this car has is the headlights. They're xenon headlights, and they're self-aware. The headlights are self-aware. They bob up and down depending on what angle the car. Like if the back end of the car is low, in order to not point into the eyes of the oncoming traffic, the headlights point down. And if there's no oncoming traffic, the headlights point up, and that kind of a thing, right? So that you always have the most optimum lighting in front of you. So
indeed,
In the process of the front fender being fixed, the mechanics at the body shop did not properly connect all the wires back together. So when I got my car back from the body shop, from having the front fender fixed and the bumper fixed, the headlights weren't working properly, and I couldn't open my door because they didn't connect the wires. They didn't connect the door, all of the whatever, the connections from the door to the front end, whatever.
So it just sat there and stayed locked and was sort of like, I don't know who you are.
Right, exactly.
I'm not letting you in.
Exactly. So, and then I had a couple other items that I needed fixing on the big black car. So I went to the BMW dealer to get my, I took it back because I wasn't sure, was, you know, did the, is the door just not working and the headlights needed to be fixed and is it me or whatever. So I took it to the BMW dealer. I had a couple other options that I needed to be addressed. And I have to tell you, people, now I don't wish to be elitist, but I must say that the experience of going to get your car serviced at the BMW dealer is exquisite. It's actually an enjoyable event. You know when you take your car to the Dodge dealer, and I've done this before. I have a Dodge pickup. I've taken my car, my truck to the Dodge, and they treat you like you're some sort of freakish creep who is interrupting their day and causing them grief, and they don't want to deal with you. They think you're some kind of an idiot, and they treat you like you don't know anything about what you're talking about, and it's typically a miserable experience going to the Dodge dealer. Can I get an amen on this, Peter?
I basically have only seen the inside of a Mazda dealer, and they're good enough, I guess. But I've been to like a Mercedes dealer and a BMW dealer and noticed that they tend to have an espresso bar.
Exactly.
And although I think a lot of it also has to do with that people who are getting their car serviced at the BMW dealer or the Mercedes dealer tend to not have to bring their kids with them. And that always seems to be kind of one of the unspoken differences that makes it more miserable if you have to stay there for 2 hours. But
oh, really? Well, the thing that I enjoyed about the BMW dealer is, you know, when you get there, you pull into the covered garage and a cute twink comes and greets you as you step out of your car. And, hello, sir, what's your name? When is your appointment for? He takes your keys. I'll look after your car, sir. He hands you, I was handed a little buzzer. You know, like when you go to a restaurant, Red Robin, they give you the buzzer, and when your table reservation comes available, your thing goes off. The vibrator goes off and the thing blinks, and that's when you can come back to the chat room. People, if you were looking at the chat room, it's quite funny. I can't get into it right now. I'm trying to tell my story. So you get this buzzer and you can go. So you go in and you wait in the waiting room where, as you mentioned, there's the espresso machine. You can choose from your choice of like 35 different types of coffees you can have. And you read the newspaper. And there's video monitors on the walls that show you all the new cars. You could have this car for $65,000, the new BMW X1 or whatever, right? And then your buzzer goes off, and you're greeted by this dude who seats you at this desk, and you have a very pleasant conversation about what's wrong with your car, and they give you a loaner. Today, I had my loaner car was the BMW X1 mini all-wheel drive SUV, just a delightful driving experience. And so anyway, I'm getting off track here, but I just have to say, it's just been such a delight to take my car into the dealer to get it fixed. And I have to tell you, now you're not going to believe this, but I have to tell you, it didn't cost me a dime. I went there, I left my car behind, they fixed everything I wanted to fix. They gave me this beautiful little loaner car for a day and a half, and I brought it back, and I'm sorry, sir, to inconvenience you. Your service today is all going to be covered by the insurance company since we fucked it up the first time we did it. Please don't beat us, sir. We love you. You're fantastic. Here's your car. Here's your keys. We've cleaned your car for you. Off you go. And it was just such a lovely experience. I just have to say, I was so impressed with my BMW dealer today.
The contented sigh.
Yes. All right. And with that, folks, I am spent, as they say. So that's the end of the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage for this week. Thank you for joining us. And thank you, Apollonius, for joining me tonight. And we'll see you again. We've got all your details. Thanks to everybody who's joined us in the chat room tonight. And I don't know. I guess that's it. Peter, thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me on. Have a good night.
Everybody wait patiently while I get the close music going here.
Do, 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 do.
Hello, Pink Wheel Nuts Garage.